Mike Malloy here. Just a second. I'm doing something. I'm busy. Okay. No, I'm not busy. Thanks for tuning in. It is Wednesday night, which normally is church night on the program. Okay, we have a couple of church night things tonight. Not much. Frankly, I'm starting to lose interest in it. It never changes too much, church night. I mean, the stories. I saw the new head of the Southern Baptist Convention on, I think, MSNBC today, one of the interview shows. And since this person is an historic first African-American to be the head of the SBC, which is the height of irony to me, and in a way, I guess not so much, but the SBC was founded all those years ago to keep the Negroes out of their precious churches, Southern Baptist Convention. Anyway, the president of the SBC was asked about the homosexual issue that is so important to everybody. The homosexual issue. Oh, my God. Let's focus on that. Let's focus on Barack Obama's birth certificate while the planet dies. That makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. And anyway, I was listening to the SBC guy, and he was just mumbling something in his confusing way about how the churches and gay folk are just... And what was ironic about it, to me, of course, is that here's a black man making excuses for discrimination within the SBC that made excuses for discrimination against him. God damn, it just cracks me up. Cracks me up! Doesn't it, you? I mean, isn't that funny in just a real, I don't know, Limbaugh-ian kind of way, you know, drug-addled, freaked out. I don't know. It really doesn't matter, except to me. It matters to me. The reason we call this church night is because for the umpteenth time, if you're a regular listener, just chat among yourselves while I go through this one more time. Just talk among yourselves over there. I used to attend prayer meeting on Wednesday evenings with my grandparents in the summer when I would go to spend the summers with them when I was a wee lad, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever. And my grandparents were Italian immigrants, and they converted immediately because there was a lot of anti-Italian bigotry when they came to this country. So they became Protestants, and the church that they joined was a Baptist church. It was part of the Southern Baptist Convention. It had a knee slapper. And, you know, my grandparents were afraid of discrimination. Of course, I didn't know. I don't think they knew that the SBC was anti-black and was founded on the whole entire basis of racism. They may have known. I don't know. My grandfather was not very good with English. So, and my grandmother was, she had been an indentured servant. That's what they call it. When she was 10 years old, she was forced to quit school and take care of the children of a farm family in central Ohio. And it's a long story. It's an interesting story. Most families of immigrants have interesting stories. I guess most families have interesting stories. Dostoevsky? Was it Dostoevsky? Anyway, I digress. Wednesday night was prayer meeting night, and my grandparents would take me to the Baptist church with them, and up we'd go into the upper room and sit there, and I would try to count dust motes coming in the sunbeams on these hot summer nights. This is long before air conditioning in churches. Are you kidding? And it was interesting to watch the adults pray. So in recognition of that long-ago time, we do Wednesday night church night on this program. So we'll have a couple of them. Couple of stories tonight that pertain to church. From Slate.com, fears about rising food prices and global food shortages are mounting as the American Midwest faces the worst drought in more than half a century with no hope of relief in the forecast. You been following this story? I mean, what is it really? Come on now. Come on. Yoo-hoo. What does it take? Hey, right-wingers, freaks that monitor the program, listen up. You know, a 42-square-mile of ice broke off a glacier in Iceland. Was it Iceland or Greenland? Iceland, I guess. And, I mean, all kinds of weirdness is going on. Do you get it yet? No? Still don't get it? Still think it's just a liberal plot? Okay. All right. Okay. One agronomist told Reuters, quote, "We're moving from a crisis to a horror story." Now, that sounds a little scary. More than half of the continent of the United States has been affected by drought, the worst since 1956. Corn and soybeans? Forget about it. Gone. Anyway, it says here from Slate, the impact of the heat wave and drought scorching the country's agricultural center is already seen in the quality of the corn crop. Department of Agriculture rated just 31% of crops this week as good or excellent, down from 66% at the same time last year. And the price of a bushel of corn has doubled to $7.72, according to the Washington Post. And corn products like ethanol, corn syrup, corn meal may also see a spike going into 2013. Blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, you got to wonder, don't you, if corn had not been genetically altered to the point now where it's not really corn, it's pig corn or salmon corn or toad corn or eyeball corn or human gene cone or corn or something. If it would have been left alone, isn't there something about survival of the fittest? And the fittest in this context means that which is most able to fit into a changing environment. So one wonders, one being moi, one wonders whether or not, given a little time, since the planet is changing, we are going back to the way the weather was 50 million years ago, that corn, had it been left alone, would have genetically evolved itself into something that was more heat resistant or drought resistant. Is that possible? You know, huh? Because evolution is an ongoing process. I don't care what the church people tell you. They can go straight to their own personal private hell where it concerns this issue. But evolution occurs constantly. So I just wonder if the corn would have been left alone, that instead of being pig corn, instead of being jellyfish corn, which reminds me, you know, of 4 or 5 Halloweens ago, Kathy and I went to a Halloween party. She dressed up like the woman from, a character from, what was that movie? Pleasantville. She made herself totally just black and white. Everything on her was black and white. No color at all. It was great. But she made me up as a genetically altered ear of corn. And it was such a cool outfit because I looked like a walking ear of corn with the corn silk and the corn husk and everything until you pulled back the corn husk around my face and I had a pig mask on. And people were freaking out. It's like, ah! The guy looked like a walking corn stalk until they opened me up. And then it was pig corn. Well, I thought it was kind of cool. I digress. We'll get back to this in a second, and as soon as we take a break here. Pig corn. Pig corn. It is church night, and like I said, we will have a couple of issues regarding church night. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
What do I just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. My faith. John in Sacramento emails in, Mike, I was working around the house listening to your Tuesday night show and almost fell over laughing when you read the Greenland-Petermann Glacier iceberg story. No, not from the fact that our planet is turning into an effing greenhouse with the greatest changes showing at the poles, with Arctic ice melting and water temps rising, all of which is leading to rising sea levels. No. It was that part of the article where the scientists just weren't sure if it could be chalked up to global warming. WTF? All I could think of was that bit by Bill Cosby eons ago where God told Noah to build an ark and Noah asked why and God replied, how long can you tread water? Metaphorically, that is our question about the economy, the democracy, the climate, and the earth. John in Sacramento. Yeah, I reckon so. So, nationofchange.org today had this posted. The fact that this year's drought ranks as one of the top 10 worst U.S. droughts of the last century, more than half the country experiencing drought conditions, blah, blah, blah. This is the second month in a row that the global land temperature was the warmest on record for this month, so it's hot all over. At Nation of Change, while it has been hotter than the 1930s, the old Dust Bowl days, in many places in the country, the drought hasn't been quite as bad as the worst of the original Dust Bowl. But if we don't act soon to slash greenhouse gas emissions, we're on our way to far worse as climate change fuels more frequent, more extreme droughts across the U.S. There's a climatologist named Jonathan Overpeck at Arizona University. He told the Associated Press, quote, this is what global warming looks like at the regional and personal level, or personal level. The extra heat increases the odds of worse heat waves, drought, storms, and wildfire. This is certainly what I and many other climate scientists have been warning about. Oh, my God. And, of course, next in line for an ass-whipping here, because we chose 30 years ago to, almost 40 years ago, not to pay attention to what science was telling us, the next to be hit is the American consumer. Look for prices to start rising. And interestingly, in a manner of speaking, over at the New Yorker magazine, Elizabeth Colbert has a piece out in the current issue called The Big Heat. And she writes, among other things, up until fairly recently, it was possible, which, of course, is not the same as advisable, but it was possible to see climate change as a phenomenon that was happening somewhere else. In the Arctic, Americans were told again and again and again, the effects were particularly dramatic. The sea ice was melting. Now, this is bad for native Alaskans and even worse for polar bears who rely on the ice for survival. But here in the lower 48, there always seem to be more pressing concerns like Barack Obama's birth certificate. Similarly, the Antarctic Peninsula was reported to be warming fast with unfortunate consequences for penguins and sea levels. But you know, penguins live far away and sea level rise is prospective. So again, the issue seemed to lack the fierce urgency of now. What she points out is that what we're experiencing now, these weather changes, they are what scientists call commitment to warming. And what that means, she calls it one of the most salient, but also unfortunately most counterintuitive aspects of global warming, is that it operates on what amounts to a time delay. Behind this summer's heat are greenhouse gases emitted decades ago. So before many effects, obviously, if today's emissions are felt, it will be time for the Summer Olympics of 2048. This is called commitment to warming. And what's at stake is where things go from there. Colbert writes, it is quite possible that by the end of this century, we could, without even really trying, engineer the return of the climate that hasn't been seen on Earth since the Eocene, some 50 million years ago. Now, of course, it's not talked about in the campaign of either Obama or Romney, presumably because they see it as just too big a bummer, you know, so why bring it up, right? Oh, my God. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. What's wrong?
Stop here
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. So we are weeks away from starting the first major offshore oil drilling operation in the Arctic. That's the Shell oil thing. And Shell, which was granted permission by the EPA and the Obama administration to do this, these explorations, they're already pulling a major bait and switch. They told the EPA just the other day that, oh, guess what? We can't meet the air pollution rules that they had already agreed to in order to get the drilling permit. All of a sudden, oh, we can't do it. Shell has known since 2010 it would have problems meeting the rules for nitrogen oxide and ammonia emissions, but officials still told the EPA they could. They could meet that. Don't worry, we'll take care of it. And now, at the last minute, Shell wants the EPA to weaken the rules. Are you surprised? Huh? The company's request does give the EPA the option to cancel Shell's permit. That's exactly what the EPA should do. You think they will? According to John Broder at the New York Times on the Green Blog, Shell has asked for this loosening of air pollution requirements for its Discoverer drill rig, which is planning to begin these operations early next month. The company also is asking for a minor air permit modification for its drill ship that is named the Kulik. That is also supposed to begin work in the Arctic in the next few weeks. An EPA spokeswoman said that the EPA is reviewing the application. A Shell spokesman said he did not expect the permit changes to affect the drilling schedule, which has been set back several weeks because of unusually heavy sea ice. Greenpeace and other groups, of course, opposed to oil and gas exploration in the Arctic, said that Shell was trying at the 11th hour to change the terms under which it was granted permission to drill. Greenpeace says, quote, this is a classic bait and switch. Shell promises EPA and by extension the American people anything that will allow it to get permits to drill the Arctic. And then at the last minute, says it won't abide by its agreement and wants EPA to issue watered down permits with no process whatsoever. Yeah, that's the way capitalism works. And of course, over the weekend, the company's drilling rig, the Noble Discoverer, came dangerously close to running aground near Dutch Harbor, where Shell has been assembling this this fleet of destroyers. The Noble Discoverer is one of two dozen ships that Shell plans to send into some of the most challenging conditions on the planet. And according to the U.S. Coast Guard, and this was at Center for American Progress, the vessel slipped anchor and drifted within 100 yards offshore before being pulled back into deeper water by a Shell tugboat. It was heading right for a collision with land. The LA Times reports, quote, the vessel's anchor failed to hold and the 514-foot ship began drifting, but its movement was halted when tugboats were called in to assist. Spokeswoman for the Coast Guard said, quote, we don't know exactly what happened yet. We do know that the vessel's anchor didn't hold. They began to drift. They let out more anchor chain to slow the drift and called for immediate tug assistance. Can you say impending massive environmental catastrophe? Of course you can. Although Shell and the Coast Guard both asserted there was no evidence of grounding, onlookers, including a longshoreman and a captain, said, or they contradicted the account, saying the vessel was not moving and appeared grounded. They agreed there's no question it hit the beach. The ship was not coming any closer. It was on the beach. Coast Guard officers said winds of 27 to 35 miles per hour likely led to the ship drifting. Conditions that are benign compared with the hurricane force gales, 20-foot swells, and dynamic sea ice the Discoverer will encounter off the North Slope where the company plans to drill offshore. How long do you think it'll take, Drew Seeger, before there is a major environmental catastrophe? Huh? Now, there's more here. The incident of this ship almost grounding, or grounding, take your pick, immediately follows the Coast Guard's refusal to certify Shell's oil spill response barge, the Arctic Challenger. Because of concerns about the fire protection system, the wiring, and the piping on this 37-year-old vessel, this is what Shell is going to use in case there's a fire as a result of a blowout. The Coast Guard also expressed doubts about the barge's ability to withstand harsh Arctic storms. The containment barge is essential to the fleet as it is designed to deliver oil spill response equipment to the five drilling sites. Without it, Shell would not have access to the equipment necessary to contain an oil spill in the Arctic Ocean. Can we all agree that there's no such thing as containing an Arctic Ocean oil spill? This is gibberish talk. This is capitalist lies. This is corporatist nonsense. An oil spill in the Arctic with hurricane force winds, 20-foot swells, dynamic sea ice, that means sea ice that is moving all over the place. You don't contain an oil spill in those conditions. You abandon it. As detailed at the Center for American Progress report entitled Putting a Freeze on Arctic Ocean Drilling, America's Inability to Respond to an Oil Spill in the Arctic. The area lacks roads. It has no railroads. It has a permanent Coast Guard facility, a major port. Or no, it does not have a permanent Coast Guard facility. It does not have a major port. No roads, no railroads, no sufficient infrastructure to house and feed a large influx of people when this disaster does occur. As a result, Shell has said that its oil spill response efforts will be largely self-contained.
fact that the company is experiencing problems with this equipment before even reaching the drill sites raises, oh, let's call them serious concerns about their contingency plans. And the piece closes with this. Shell's flotilla of vessels will continue to wait in Dutch Harbor, which is 1,000 miles south of the proposed drilling sites, the closest major port to the North Slope, Dutch Harbor, while unexpectedly heavy sea ice prevents them from making the voyage to the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas. A vice president of Shell recently told CNN that the company's proposed exploration in the Arctic will be, quote, the most complex, most difficult wells we've drilled in company history, end quote. So, there you have it, truth seekers. Seriously, how long do you think it'll be before a disaster occurs, courtesy of Shell, of proportions that we are unable to even contemplate right now? Because there has never been, the type of disaster that's going to happen. At least here, I realize there have been some oil spills in the North Sea off the British Isles, and there might have been a spill from a tanker off one of the Scandinavian countries. But this is drilling in very, relatively speaking, shallow water. And shallow water is usually pretty dangerous when you have weather conditions such as those that exist where they're going to be drilling. How long do you think it'll be before catastrophe? Think about that for a while and see if you get colon spasms. Before the hour, if you live in southeastern PA near the nuclear power plant in Montgomery County, don't worry. Everything is okay. Honestly. Operators of the plant in that area shut down one of two electricity-generating reactors this morning following what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission said was an electrical fault in, quote, non-safety equipment, end quote. It's the Limerick Generating Station. It entered into what the commission terms an unusual event. That's according to an NRC spokeswoman. She said, quote, it's stable and there was no impact on public health and safety, end quote. She's talking about the Unit 1 reactor. The incident, according to the Express Times newspaper in Montgomery County, I guess, the incident is not expected to affect the Mid-Atlantic Power Grid, which is operated by PJM. What the hell is PJM? That's the power company there, I guess. Yeah, okay. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission says it has resident inspectors at the plant, and those stationed in Limerick, outside Pottstown, PA, responded immediately. Mm-hmm. The NRC spokeswoman said, "It is my understanding that the company is working to better understand what happened." That's confidence building, isn't it? "The company is working to better understand what happened and why it happened and to fix whatever needs to be fixed to prevent a recurrence. And the NRC inspectors will be observing their activities during this time." Aha! Ooh! End quote. Well, that's... I mean, don't you just feel... Do you live near this place? Do you live near the Limerick power generating plant in Pottstown, PA? Huh? Well, if you do, rest assured that, according to the NRC spokeswoman, the company is working to better understand what happened, and why it happened, and to fix whatever needs to be fixed. The incident occurred about 8:15 this morning in a transformer that provides electricity to pumps that, according to the company, well, the plant operator, of course, is Exelon Corporation. Of course, I mean, they're involved in all of this near disaster stuff that eventually is going to no longer be near disaster and become Fukushima. But anyway, it occurred about 8:15 this morning in a transformer that provides electricity to pumps that are part of electricity generation, not reactor cooling, according to all the spokespeople. The plant operator, Exelon, terminated the unusual event. Unusual event. Isn't that cool terminology that the nuclear power industry uses? Unusual event. What happened? Oh, we had an unusual event. Oh, yeah, what happened? Well, the place, the top blew off and saturated the surrounding 200-mile radius with poisonous radioactivity. Oh, so it really was an unusual event. Yeah, you know, stuff happens. A spokesman for Exelon said, quote, "When the generating cooling equipment is unavailable, then our operators, by procedure, then begin to shut the plant down manually, and we were able to do that. That unit is offline this morning, and it will remain offline until we can get in there, schedule the repairs, do the work, do the inspections, and complete testing to ensure safe operation." Oh, really? Okay. So we have to get in there, schedule the repairs, schedule? They have to work out a schedule? What if somebody's on vacation? What if the key person is on vacation? Schedule? You have to schedule repairing an unusual event at a nuclear power generating station? You have to schedule it? Well, maybe we can be there Wednesday. No, really? What happens if you can't be there Wednesday? Well, damn, my kid has a tap dance lesson. Let me see. How about Thursday week? Oh, my God. Unusual event. Well, not to worry. not to worry. It's okay. And, of course, there's always the little human interest part of the story. The shutdown comes amid high demand in soaring summer heat this week. Allentown, PA-based PPL Electric Utilities saw Tuesday as its highest power consumption of 2012 at just more than 7,000 megawatts between 5 and 6 p.m., So, you know, there's stress and strain all over the place, and Exelon is going to figure out, once they can get the scheduling right, what happened that caused an unusual event in one of their nuclear reactors near Pottstown, PA. Oh, by the way, the public was not alerted of the unusual event. The NRC spokeswoman said, well, it caused them to staff certain positions and make some communications, like they notified the state, but the plant responded as it is designed. No need to tell anybody. Not to worry. Everything's cool. Everything's okay. We'll be right back.
This is a referral service.
This hour is being sponsored by Kay and Jim. Kay writes, in honor of my beautiful mother Marianne's 73rd birthday, we are so thankful that you made the sacrifice of returning to this insane asylum known as the United States of America to be close to us. We love you, Mom, Kay and Jim. Very sweet. Thanks, Kay. Andrew in Redwood City, California, wants me to remember that Exelon, the company that runs the Pottstown or the, what's the name of the nuclear reactor that had an unusual event. Exelon is the company that runs it. And Andrew writes, Mike, don't forget, Exelon is one of Obama's largest campaign contributors. A moratorium of 30 years of new nuke plants ended when Obama secured the office and gave the go-ahead on two plants in Georgia, with a whopping guarantee backed by the full faith and credit of the citizens of the United States. Isn't that Exelon building those accidents waiting to happen? Andy. I guess Exelon may be the operator of Southern Company, I think. Georgia Power, Southern Company, which is the single most polluting entity in America, I believe, unless somebody has surpassed them. Southern Company is, they pollute everything. They're destroying the forests in the southeast with acid rain. Yeah, it's still acid rain from coal. The discharges from these nuclear power generating stations, the radioactive discharges, the water used for the cooling pools, heats up, I don't know how many degrees, but goes into streams and lakes and rivers and kills everything because of the heat. Oh, well. So Exelon, yeah, Exelon is a big campaign contributor, according to Andrew, one of the largest campaign contributors to the Obama campaign. And from Glenn in Omaha, regarding corn, Mike, there are several varieties of Indian and heirloom corn that are drought tolerant. There is a variety of Navajo corn that grows well in Arizona. Now, it's not a big producer. There are hundreds of varieties of corn developed by Native Americans and American settlers. The problem is that these varieties are quickly disappearing. There are efforts by some to keep these varieties alive. The big corn chemical companies couldn't care less about them. There's a group trying to save the heirloom varieties, and you can check out their website, Seed Savers, seedsavers.org. S-E-E-D, Savers, seedsavers.org. Thanks, Glenn. And I have to tell you, Glenn, I am amazed to get an email from Omaha, Nebraska. You're listening to the program at home. I don't think anybody in Nebraska listened to this program. I would understand why. If I lived in Nebraska, I probably wouldn't listen to this program. But thanks, Glenn. So, yeah, that's what we were talking about earlier about there are, call them a native or heirloom varieties of corn that could withstand the drought, the global climate change that we're going through. And if those couldn't, then corn left to its own devices, like any organism left to its own devices, will either evolve to fit into the new environment or will disappear. But it has to be given a chance. And, of course, Monsanto and the rest of these, Archer Daniels Midland and the rest of these companies that have developed seed corn that can only be used once, I believe I'm right on this, and then it dies, and in order to plant another crop, you have to go back to the predatory capitalist sons of bitches and buy more, rather than just save some of your seed stock and do it again next year. Can't do that now, see? It's amazing how they've taken over everything, isn't it? They being the capitalists, corporate America, they've taken over the voting system. They've taken over how food is produced, how food is distributed, what food costs, everything. Everything. And you want me to believe that voting for Romney or Obama will make a difference? Really? You do want me to believe that? Okay. Well, I don't believe it, but I know you want me to. Tom in Maryland has something here specifically pertaining to church night here on the Molloy program. There is something coming up on March 31st, 2013, next March 31st. And this is from facebook.com/events. And Tom in Maryland writes, this is, he's quoting from the event site, quote, on March 31st, 2013. No, this, you sure this isn't something from Andy Borowitz? No, it's not? Okay. On March 31st, 2013, Christians all over the world will take to the streets in their automobiles, relying only on the divine protection of Jesus Christ. They will prove that the Savior of man will not abandon them when they remove their hands from the steering wheels of their cars for a total of 5 minutes. This is Jesus Take the Wheel Day. They will not be at a red light or a stop sign. They will be on the highways. This is true faith, all caps. Jesus Christ does not abandon his children, and with the current state of the world, it's time to show Jesus that we have not abandoned him. Do not come to this page telling us that we are crazy and that we are going to die. Jesus is our shepherd, and he will tend to his flock. Please join us and show that you are not afraid to place your life in the hands of Jesus Christ. So it's at facebook.com/events. You can find it, Jesus Take the Wheel Day. Yeah, then the next day is Jesus Drive the Ambulance Day, I guess. I don't know. This is madness. Is this real? Is this real? Jesus Take the Wheel Day? If it is real, I wonder how many people are going to die. No, it's not good because the people who want to take their hands off the wheel, if you would just do that on some highway, empty highway in Utah, you know, just do that. I realize the roads are straight out there, but eventually your car will drift and you'll hit a ditch, and then you'll slide off the shoulder of the road into the desert, and keep going, then you'll slam into a couple of boulders or something, and you'll go be with your Jesus. How about Jesus Grow Me Wings Day at the Grand Canyon? Oh, my God. Jesus Grow Me Wings Day? Oh! Who said that? Somebody in our chat room said that. What else we got? I mean, it's just madness. Madness. Oh, I did want to get to this. We have a break coming here, but when we come back, I want to get to this one. It was editorial in the Times. And the editorial, the reason I want to share it with you, it shows the extent to which Republican governors will murder, literally, cause the deaths of their own citizens in order to stick their thumb in Barack Obama's eye. So I'll share it with you when we come back. They will kill their own citizens, and they will do it gleefully and willingly. We'll be right back.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going when the werewolves of London.
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. It was titled The Rush to Abandon the Poor. No, it has nothing to do with the drug-addled pig man. Texas has the country's worst health care record, if you didn't know that. And that poor benighted state also just happens to have a governor who has been the biggest mouth and the most idiotic noise in national efforts to improve his own state's healthcare record. According to the Times, a quarter of the residents of Texas, that means 6.3 million people, are uninsured. That's the highest percentage in the country of all the states. And by the way, that number includes more than a million children. Rick Perry wants to murder people. Every single Republican governor who is joining this train of freaks who say they're not going to take the government's money to expand Medicaid, It's not their money. It's the federal government money. It comes from all of us. They are murdering. They are directly responsible for the deaths of people that are going to start occurring because they have no health insurance. These are killers. Just as surely as a drone strike in Afghanistan wipes out the family of a suspected terrorist, or family of a local village elder, just as surely as that's murder, these Republican governors are lining up and declaring themselves ready to commit murder against their own citizens. And they will do it. And will they be charged with any crimes? Of course not. Of course not. This is not crime. How could it be a crime? All they're doing is stuffing their thumb into Barack Obama's eye. Why? That's not a crime. If people die because these Republican governors do it, well, it must be Barack Obama's fault, don't you know? Texas ranks last in prenatal care. Prenatal care. You know, fetuses and zygotes and collections of cells. if a woman in the privacy of her doctor's office wants to terminate a pregnancy, of course, these filthy, stinking Republicans will come crashing through the walls. On the other hand, if a woman carrying, what do they call them, a pre-human or a pre-born cuddly little baby asks for help, these same Republicans will spit in her face. Aren't these demons wonderful? Who left the door to hell open? Did Andy do that? Somebody did. Texas ranks last in prenatal care and finished last on a new federal assessment of overall health quality that examined factors like disease prevention, deaths from illnesses, and cancer treatment. Yet, according to the New York Times, Governor Rick Perry, strangely puffed up as he was so often in his presidential bid, recently told the Obama administration to kiss his ass, that he would proudly refuse a huge infusion of Medicaid money that would significantly reduce those shameful statistics and cover 1.7 million more people. I'm not going to take that money. At least five other Republican governors have made a similar choice, announcing that they will not expand their Medicaid program for the poor, even though the federal government would pay for almost all of it for several years under Obama's Affordable Care Act. As the Times says, their refusal illuminates a growing divide over the nature of a state government's role. Around the country, a new study shows states continue to face a fiscal crisis because of rising costs and Republican-driven cuts in federal aid. Now, I've been telling you folks for weeks, for months, that Republicans are out to destroy the United States. There is no doubt that they are trying to do this. But it's getting more and more personal. They are now to the point where Republican members of Congress and Republican governors are willing to commit murder. And I realize that's a legal term. I don't care. They are willing to commit murder. They are willing to kill their own citizens through neglect or deliberately by saying to someone who desperately needs cancer treatment, who desperately needs prenatal care, who desperately needs a test to determine what it is that's taking their lives. And these Republican governors are saying, F you. Get out of my face. Go die. Now, we execute people in most of the states in the United States. Texas does. Texas, I think, is the leading state for executions. Are they going to arrest Rick Perry and charge him with murder and put him in the state penitentiary and put him on death row and then take him to the death house and execute him because of all the death he's going to cause? You think that'll happen? Is that a possibility? Will Rick Perry and these other Republican governors be arrested and charged with murder? Because they are so goddamn determined that they are going to stick their thumbs in Barack Obama's eyes. Because remember what marble-mouthed turtle Mitch McConnell said?
Well, the senators make sure, Republican Party makes sure that Barack Obama's one-term president.
They are killing people. They are killing people. Do you hear me?
Yes, I'm a long-tall Texan.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So what we're talking about here is what the New York Times in an editorial today calls the rush to abandon the poor. Texas, with the most miserable record where it concerns health care in the country. Also has a governor who is not only a lunatic, but also now has decided he wants to see people die. He's going to be responsible for killing people in the state of Texas. And the way he's going to do it is to refuse the infusion of Medicaid money that would reduce the health problems in his state and offer coverage to 1.7 million more people. See, this is where I get hung up very, very easily and very quickly. While I believe in single payer, none of this would be happening. I still acknowledge that the Affordable Care Act has some aspects to it that people desperately need right now. So I don't want to get into a great big philosophical discussion via email here about the merits of single payer versus the demerits of Affordable Care Act. I understand all that, but I also understand that you have six Republican governors, or eight Republican governors, six or eight, I don't know, who just as an act of defiance against Barack Obama, just as a goddamn childish act of defiance. This is like your 10-year-old standing there and putting her hands on her hips and saying, I'm not going to do it. That's what these supposedly adult white men are doing. Aren't you proud of them? Huh? You people live in these states? Wisconsin, South Carolina, Florida, Texas, Virginia. Well, not Virginia. Iowa, Louisiana. Aren't you proud of your governors? Aren't they doing just a wonderful thing here? You people who vote Republican and you're just goddamn desperate right now. You don't know how you're going to get that cancer operation for your wife. You don't know how you're going to get some kind of assistance because your husband has a horrible infection in his leg and you have no health insurance. But goddamn it, you're going to vote Republican, aren't you? You're going to keep these people in because you can't stand the black man in the White House. Can you? You sorry bastard, you. Now, remember, it used to be a Republican thing, right? A Republican thing about how this long tradition of states being the final backstop for society's neediest, that the states would handle it, right? As the Times says, over the last year, for example, eight states have cut or eliminated cash welfare payments to their poorest residents. It happened last week in Pennsylvania, where 61,000 residents in the state of Pennsylvania, almost all of whom are disabled and poor, were told that they would abruptly lose their $200 monthly general assistance payments. Why? Because this is the way the governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Corbett, decides to save $150 million a year. His administration said, well, we don't have any choice here. But Governor Tom Corbett also handed out twice that, $300 million in business tax cuts earlier this month. You see what these sons of bitches are doing? This is murder. Right now, it's attempted murder. When people start dying, Tom Corbett, space cadet, and Rick Perry, massive, monstrous, doofus, dumbass, will be guilty of, or at least should be charged with, murder. Murder! John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, has cut hundreds of millions of dollars from education. But when the state found itself with a $235 million surplus a few weeks ago, he announced it would go into a rainy day fund, doing nothing to deal with rising classroom sizes. In Maine, Governor Paul LePage, he's the one who compared the health care reform law to the Holocaust. He signed a budget bill in May that will reduce or eliminate existing Medicaid coverage for 21,000 people. You're off. You're out. Get out of here. Go F and die. That's murder. These governors are guilty of murder. How many times do you want me to say it? I want these little pissy-ass right-wing websites to pick up on this. Get it published tomorrow, you dorks. I want this out there. Get it out. Lib Talker says Republican governors commit murder. Spell all the words right, too. Use spell check, you halfwits. But get it out there. Governor Perry, opposes the existing Medicaid program. And a recent letter to Washington, according to the Times, said that expanding it represented, quote, brazen intrusions into the sovereignty of our state, end quote, and would, quote, threaten even Texas with financial ruin, end quote. Now, that's the lies that this incipient murderer puts out there. The truth is that Washington will pay all the cost of the expansion for 3 years, and then they will pay 90% of it. So Rick Perry, the killer, stands there and delivers a stomach punch to the millions of uninsured Texans who are going to have to stay that way. Now, the Times does acknowledge that many mainstream Republican governors are taking a different approach. In a letter to the president last week, Governor Bob McDonnell of Virginia, the chairman of the Republican Governors Association, said states should think very carefully before they reject this federal money. Though he, Governor McDonnell, Bob McDonnell, though he remained quite critical of health care reform and Medicaid, he also noted that refusing the expansion money would, quote, create a significant gap in coverage for low-income people. So for now, at least, the governor of Virginia recognizes an obligation to its weakest citizens. But Texas, Florida, South Carolina, Wisconsin, Iowa, Louisiana, they say to their weakest citizens, piss off and go die. Now, every single governor of those states claims to be a follower of Jesus H. Christ. They claim to be Christian. They will wallow in their Christianity. They will slobber all over themselves to convince you of how devoted they are to Jesus and to Christianity. You bunch of goddamn hypocrites, you filthy hypocrites, your own Lord and Savior told you what to do. He told you to take care of these, the least among you, because how you treat them is how you're treating me. What is wrong with you? But do you so-called Christians realize how long you're going to fry? How long your ass is going to burn in your created hell? Do you get that? Do you not understand that? You are defying God. Your God. It doesn't mean anything to anybody else, but it must mean something to you because you're always slobbering it all over everybody else. And yet, you are saying directly to your own Savior, this didn't come from any of the Bible writers. This came out of the mouth of Jesus. Did you feed the hungry? Did you clothe the naked? Did you take care of the sick? Did you visit the poor in prison? Did you do that? If you didn't, get out of my sight. Amazing. The hypocrisy of these people is just stunning. I mean, it's overpowering. Man. So these Republican governors, these wonderful, loving, spirit-filled Christians, these hypocritical sons of bitches who will get in church on Sunday morning and beat their Bibles into a pulp, and who'll leave church on Sunday and beat your face to a pulp with their Bibles. These hypocritical bastards. Then turn around and defy, literally, specifically, an admonition from their own Savior, as they call him. As ye do to these, the least among you, you do it to me. You people are in for a rough eternity. Are you aware of that? You're in for a very, very hot, scalding, painful, endless, vicious, violent eternity. So I would ask you, You going to repent, you filthy hypocrites?
The taste of love is sweet. When the hearts like ours meet. I fell for you like a child.
For the hour, this hour is being sponsored by Kay and Jim. Thanks, Kay. Thanks, Jim. The message, in honor of my beautiful mother Marianne's 73rd birthday, we are so thankful that you made the sacrifice of returning to this insane asylum known as the United States of America to be close to us. We love you, Mom. Kay and Jim. Thanks, both of you. It is church night. From Matthew 25, the judgment of the nations. Please open your Bibles to verse 31 and read along. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee hungry, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in? Or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me. Then shall he say unto them on his left hand, Rick Perry and the rest of them, Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee hunger, or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. Amen. The word of the Lord. I can't stand the hypocrisy. Yeshua's own words, as my friend Bob Kincaid would say, in fact did say, those are not interpretive, allegedly. Those are from the same dude who gave the Sermon on the Mount. He only gave four sermons, right? Four? Was it four or three? The rest of it is nonsense, written by crazy people who followed him later and wanted to change it all. This is assuming that this rabbi did wander around the Middle East 2,000 years ago. I'm willing to accept that. I am. I've never had a problem accepting the humanity of someone named Jesus. No problem whatsoever. And the lessons that he tried to teach the Republicans back then, the right-wingers. And they wouldn't listen. They haven't listened for 2,000 years. In fact, what they did was so pervert what he was saying that they set up a structure whose foundational principle is child molestation. Think about that for a while if you really want to drive yourself insane. But listen up, you Protestants. This is the word right out of Yeshua's mouth. Your own Bible, which you claim to be inerrant. There's not a mistake in it. So you, Rick Perry, how do you do this? How do you spit in Jesus Christ's eye? How do you do that? How do you bitch slap your own Savior? How do you do that, Rick Perry? How do the rest of you hypocritical Christians do that? How do you stomp on his foot and laugh when he hops around? How do you do that? You people have a lot of balls, I'll tell you. You really do. If I believed in a religion that had as its centerpiece a God who was violent, who had no problem with genocide, even crushing the fetuses, and this crazy God sent his son here, and his son said, listen up. I only got three or four quick messages. Listen up. Here they are. And one of them was what I just quoted for you out of Matthew. You people are crazy. You're going to defy the son of this violent God who will rip your heads off and piss in your neck before he sends you to hell? Are you crazy? Quick answer. Yes, you are. Man. I gotta go have communion. 7 past the hour. Going back to the Jesus Take the Wheel Day, which is supposed to be March 31st, 2013, unless that's a big joke, has to be, but there is a website about that. Cat Mary in Memphis writes in, never drove with my hands off the wheel, but I did drive about 3 blocks once with my eyes closed. This was back during some excellent pot on a stick days, liberally laced with opium. Yowza. Gord protects the working girl, evidently. Woo-ha. Cat Mary in Memphis, who don't do that no more. 3 blocks with your eyes closed, huh? Oh, man. Bob Kincaid sent me a link here to, this is at Think Progress. Tonight, George Zimmerman, you know, the killer, currently facing second-degree murder charges for killing Trayvon Martin, participated in a highly unusual interview on Fox News with this psychopathic bastard Sean Hannity. Hannity, in his stupefyingly crazed way, asked Zimmerman if he regretted getting out of his car to follow Trayvon, carrying a gun, or if he regretted anything at all about the night he killed Trayvon Martin. Zimmerman said he regretted nothing because he believed it was God's plan. Quote, it was all God's plan to kill Trayvon Martin. You sick, ugly son of a bitch. He also said there isn't anything he would do differently in retrospect. Well, I'll look for that to be all over the news tomorrow, huh? So God wanted this freakish Zimmerman character to kill Trayvon Martin. Now, I realize, I mean, I just said last segment that this God is a very perverse, psychotic God. I mean, of all the gods I've ever read about, this Christian God is the most perverse, murderous, vicious, violent God I think ever created. So it's not surprising that this poor, effed up George Zimmerman would think that God wanted him to kill Trayvon Martin. Is this sick or what? Is that going to be his defense? And as Kincaid writes, time for the Christians to own up. Is Zimmerman one of them? Has Jesus forgiven him? Is Jesus okay with gun-toting Christians slaughtering teenagers half their age and with the same skin color as he has? This is where the sheep are separated from the goats. My God, I just... And Hannity, Hannity claims to be a Christian. He's not. He's some kind of a... He may be, but he's one of those Christians that uses his religion to rip the skin off of people. He's not the kind of Christian that... I don't know. What difference does it make? But Hannity is such a hypocritical little punk himself. Anything you would have done different, George? No. God told me to do it. God told him to do it. It was God's plan for me to kill Trayvon Martin. Well, I just wonder now if there will be a stampede of good Bible-believing Christians to the various microphones tomorrow to disavow what this strange George Zimmerman said. I wonder if the prosecution will, the prosecuting attorney will use Zimmerman's own words. This is a new one. I killed somebody because, God, well, it's not necessarily new. I take it back. Maybe what Zimmerman is doing is building his insanity defense. That's what it's all about. Yeah. God told me to do it. As a matter of fact, what am I talking about? That's usually what a lot of these right-wing crazy bastards, after they have murdered people and children and women and men and animals and, you know, God told them to do it. Well, God told the Hebrews to cross over the River Jordan and just lay absolute waste to the Canaanites, right? Just God wanted every one of them dead, even the ones that weren't born yet. Kill them all. Cut their heads off, impale them, burn their villages, murder, 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 murder. So maybe Rick Perry and the rest of these filthy, psychotic Republican Christian governors are doing exactly what their God wants them to do. Murder, kill, destroy, violate. Ooh! Ooh, how can anyone be a member of that cult? How do you do that? Okay. Yeah, God told George Bush to attack Iraq. Remember that? He told an interviewer for one of the Israeli newspapers. Yeah, well, God told me to do it. What? Yeah. This is amazing, and the thing about it that literally freaks me out. Not metaphorically, not. I am just kidding. What literally freaks me out is that there's so many of these people walking among us who insist that this is a Christian nation. Now, when you take a look, and they may be right, because when you take a look at the most overt purveyor and covert purveyor of violence on this planet for the past century, with one or two notable historical exceptions. You have to put in a special category people like Stalin or Pol Pot or, oh, leave him out. He was small potatoes. Stalin or Hitler. They belong in a singular category all their own. Individually. Not even together. I mean, these were murderers of a scope that a George Bush or a Rick Perry could only aspire to, but could never get there. But if you leave them out, and take a look at not individuals, but what state, what nation. I sat here a couple of months ago and read you a list of U.S. invasions of countries. And it was over, what did I get up to, 186? Just since the Spanish-American War, 1898. So the greatest purveyor of violence, as Martin Luther King said before he was finally iced by the federal government, the greatest purveyor of violence on the face of the earth is and has been the United States. Now, we're not supposed to talk about that or think about it. I will goddamn sure tell my children and my grandchildren the truth. How about you? You going to tell your kids, your family members the truth? And maybe it is all part of God's plan. I mean, God is a violent, Christian, Jewish, Islamic God is a violent, bloodlusted freak. So maybe we are a Christian nation. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. Losing my religion. Trying to keep up with you. And I don't know if I can do it. Oh no, I said to you. We'll come back.
Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. The phones are open now. 877-996-2556 is the number if you want to call in. 877-996-2556. I'm not sure where to go now with, well, the Institute for Public Accuracy has something here from Bloomberg. Bloomberg reports, quote, Iraq's crude oil production overtook Iran's last month for the first time in more than two decades. The rising rate of Iraqi production comes as foreign investors such as ExxonMobil and BP are developing new fields and reworking older deposits. Greg Muddit is the author of the just released paper, Fuel on the Fire, Oil and Politics in Occupied Iraq, or book. He said today, quote, I want you to hear this. Government officials meeting in the Pentagon before the Iraq War planned to use the United States occupation to open the country to big oil. The documents marked secret slash no foreign were obtained under the Freedom of Information Act and revealed for the first time the role of the Energy Infrastructure Planning Group, which was established in 2002 by Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Douglas Feith to plan how to run the Iraqi oil industry under the Coalition Provisional Authority. In a November 2002 presentation to the Deputies Committee of the National Security Council, the Energy Infrastructure Planning Group proposed not to repair war damage to oil infrastructure because doing so could, quote, discourage private sector involvement, end quote, in rebuilding the industry. That proposal, however, was rejected in order to, quote, minimize disruptions and promote confidence and stability in world markets, end quote, and to maximize revenues to finance the administration of Iraq. In January 2003, the planning group instead proposed a new strategy under which initial repairs carried out by Halliburton subsidiary Kellogg Brown & Root, Cheney's company, would be followed by long-term contracts with multinational companies to expand Iraqi oil production to 5 million barrels per day awarded by the U.S. Occupation Authority. Although noting that many believe such decisions should be left to a future Iraqi government, the Energy Infrastructure Planning Group argued that this expansion held advantages, including putting long-term downward pressure on oil price and forcing questions about Iraq's future relations with OPEC. With private companies operating in Iraq since 2010, those questions have already begun to surface. Last month, analysts noted that Iraq's rising production could constrain OPEC's ability to influence oil prices. It goes on and on and on. And the point of all this, this was an interview that I think Amy Goodman conducted on Democracy Now! She interviewed Greg Muttit, I think, yesterday. If you don't listen to Amy Goodman's program, shame on you. You should. Really. The whole point here, though, is to make clear for once and forever that remember when Dick Cheney met, I guess, in the White House with the energy summit meeting. Remember that shortly after the Bush crime family was appointed by the Supreme Court to steal, murder and kill this country. And Cheney and Bush, of course, always refused, no matter who ordered them to, refused to release the details of what was said in those meetings. And it was shortly after that, those meetings, of course, that Iraq was invaded and the oil was taken from that country and put in the hands of the multinational oil companies and into companies like Kellogg Brown and Root, a Halliburton subsidiary that Dick Cheney still gets money from. It's just stunning that, not stunning, it is just expected that capitalist America would be willing to slaughter anywhere, take your pick on the figure, anywhere from 500,000 to 2 million Iraqis and cause the deaths and dismemberment and maiming of 20,000 Americans in order to get Iraq's oil. Now, if that's not a crime against their own people committed by the Bush administration, then what in the hell is? Anybody want to tell me what a real crime would be? Everybody said, Lord, 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 Lord. Everybody was on in. They're gonna divvy up the reward. One. There came a siren and a flashing light. What the mean individual was there till the black night. Hey, 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 hey. They wonder where he is. Because he left the neighborhood like a rattlesnake. Attention. Before the hour, the phone number here is 877-996-2556. Sam is in Los Angeles listening on XM. Hey, Sam.
How you doing, Mike?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I just thought there would be a parallel between these eight Republican governors denying health care to their state citizens and the practices of Bain Capital under Romney's guidance.
Mm-hmm.
I think also brought, you know, death, destroying pensions, health care plans. I mean, it would be interesting to find out exactly how many people died as a result of Bain Capital's takeovers of these companies.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I would be curious to know also, but this is one of those... one of those aspects of predatory capitalism, if that's not redundant, that it's very difficult to quantify.
I mean, when people lose their homes, their pensions...
Oh, sure.
Death has got to occur.
It does. You go back to the savings and loan scandals of the 80s, and there was a spate of reports of older people who had invested everything they had into... the SNLs that were looted by right-wingers, and a spate of reports talking about older couples who were committing joint suicide. Now, you know, to me, that's real crazy that life would be so valueless to people that because they lost all of their money, they would die. On the other hand, they would choose to die. On the other hand, it's probably very callous of me to make that kind of a generalized statement because I don't know what these lives consisted of and to what extent they counted on whatever they had that was invested in the SNLs. So this part of capitalism, this is a part that I don't think the right wingers ever understand, especially the working class or the working poor who happen to be right wingers, and they won't give it up no matter what, no matter how many times they get smashed in the face by capitalism. They refuse to see who their real enemy is. I can never get that right. But you may be right on Bain Capital. But with the with the governors refusing to accept Medicaid that is paid for by the federal government for the first 3 years, which means paid for by everybody, you know what I'm saying? But it doesn't come out of the state coffers. And then from that point on, it's 90% paid for
by the federal government, and this is Medicaid, and to refuse that because the Affordable Care Act made that voluntary, and to refuse that, these governors are literally, specifically, causing death.
Yeah.
So it's just unbelievable to me that they continue to A, get away with it, but B, somehow they justify it. These Republican administrations justify it. I mean, how can you order people to be cut off of the only lifeline they have and still face yourself in the mirror in the morning and go to church and pray? How do you do that?
Well, it's really a type of mass murder.
It is.
If you think about it.
It is. It is mass murder as surely as any mass murder committed by any monstrous tyrant in history. It just is. It again, it may not be on the level or scope, but who was it that said one death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic? So, I don't know. I was that Stalin? I can't get my head around the idea that there are governors, Democrat or Republican, there are men in this country who are in positions of power who would say to the residents of their own states, you are going to die because I am going to interfere with the flow of cash that would save your life. Wow.
Despicable.
It is. Thanks, Sam. I appreciate you checking in. Thanks a lot for calling. It's just, I can't process that, you know? That's one of those things that I can't be very Buddhist about it and take note of it and let it flow through. I can't. I simply can't do it because it is such an egregious abuse of power. I mean, that's academic speak, that political speak. That means nothing to say that. Egregious abuse of power. To hell with that. It's murder. Plain and simple, murder. and how, I mean, how that's done is just amazing to me. Email here from Roz in Canada. Mike, I'm having a terrible case of deja vu. I keep seeing the old guard from Bush's day creeping out of their crypts. Frank Gaffney, a particularly distasteful entity, is showing up more and more. I also heard that Cheney might be offering up his terminally miserable daughter for vice president. Sununu and Jeb Bush and the dingbat Palin are all hovering around. I guess this bodes well for Obama. These are nasty, mean, and evil people who are destroying the country and, by extension, the world. As for Shell wanting to drill where they shouldn't, don't they know the oceans are already overpolluted and acidic, almost to the point that no living thing will be able to exist in those waters? It's a crime against man and animal alike. They have to be stopped. Our very lives depend on stopping their insane greed. There has to be a larger purpose to their insanity. I wish all the soldiers would lay down their arms, all the workers lay down their tools, and well, you get the picture. What can they do when all is said and done? We have to stop being their dumb slaves, never countering anything they do. A big change is coming down the pike. Good or bad is anybody's guess, but it is going to erupt and soon. I'm so angry, Mike. Their poison is beginning to affect us now. Roz. Yeah. The conventional wisdom is, and I don't necessarily subscribe to this, but the conventional wisdom is after the first Tuesday in November, is that election day? And Obama is reelected, all of this madness will start to cease. And the conventional wisdom also is that if Mitt Romney, by some horrific joke perpetrated on Americans,
if he is elected president or assigned the presidency, then the revolution will really begin. So, you know, depending, I guess, on what you want to see happen a few short months from now is going to determine what you are going to do, I guess, on Election Day. As for me, I'm having a difficult time trying to separate the sheep from the goats, so to speak. I don't know, and that's why I don't offer any kind of political advice at all. All I do is criticize. That's all I do. This is not a program to get good, positive, uplifting, problem-solving information. Because as far as I'm concerned, we passed that juncture a long-ass time ago. And that there is no problem-solving information that is going to help any of this. That the thing that has to happen is the system needs to be stopped, dismantled, thrown on the junk heap of history, and a new system put in place. So that's why I've said for years, you don't come to this program for solutions. In my opinion, there are none. Or there is none. The system is so broken and so corrupted and so irreparable that it has to be moved aside. And the only way it can be moved aside is to stop participating in it. Just that. Just to stop. That's all. This is the maddening part for me. I would so want to join in a general strike in this country where millions of people on a pre-selected day just absolutely refused to continue with the operation of the machine. Would there be chaos for a while? Yes, there would. Would we survive it? Yes, we would. Would we be able to move on to something that was rational? Well, that's the hope. We'll be right back. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. Scott is in Gilbertsville, PA.
Hey, you there, Mike?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Hey, I heard you talking earlier about the power plant in Limerick.
Yeah.
I live in Gilbertsville, which is the next town over from Limerick.
You do?
I'm about 10 miles straight line from my house to the power plant. It's been there as long as I've been there, so it's, you know, just another thing. But as far as the incident happening there, and you said that, you know, they don't talk about it on the news. I got home from work this morning at about 11, and I watched the news, and there was nothing on the news really except for Romney and the mayor of Trenton, New Jersey, got his house raided by the FBI. So nothing about the power plant.
Nothing that said that it was considered to be, this is nuke industry speak, it was considered to be an unusual event, whatever the hell that means. I don't know, you know, what their method of using language is, but if you have a nuclear power plant and a switch goes off someplace or something causes the plant's operators to take it offline or whatever they do, to refer to that as an unusual event would seem to me to be on the same level as referring to a meteor heading for the Earth as something's about to happen. I don't know. It's just crazy. Have you ever had an alert that something was up with that plant in all the years that you've lived near it?
Occasionally, you'll see a small section of the newspaper, just a small news clipping where it says exactly that. They experienced an unusual event, and they shut down reactor one or reactor two, and everybody goes about their daily business like nothing happened. They have a pretty sophisticated alert system if something really went wrong. I've never heard that except for when they test it the first Monday of every month. But like I say, this happening today, I wasn't aware of it till I heard it on your show, which is the last place I would expect to hear about it. And it won't be front page news in the local paper tomorrow. Once again, it'll be a small story on page six.
Well, the newspaper, and I'm not sure, I don't have the story right in front of me now, but the newspaper that did report this, at least on their website, said that, you know, they quoted the operator of the plant, Exelon, as saying, they're either the operator or the owner-operator, one of the two, probably the operator. But Exelon person issued a statement that said, no, I'm paraphrasing here, but the statement more or less said, no, we decided not to tell the public about it. Now, when you're dealing, especially in the shadow of what happened in Fukushima, Japan, when you're dealing, or Three Mile Island, when you're dealing with nuclear power and the potential for the kind of disaster that we've never had in this country, when you're dealing with that potential, I would think that the authorities would want the people, the citizens around that area, to understand, okay, there may be an event here. You may have to get in your cars and get the hell out of Dodge very, very quickly and very orderly. Rather than just, I mean, look what happened at Three Mile Island, where nobody said anything until, remember Jimmy Carter went to Three Mile Island and actually went down into the building that housed the reactor, I believe,
right,
to check it out. But I think for 2 or 3 days, nobody said anything.
Right.
Or at least they didn't report on the extent of what was happening at Three Mile Island. I realize that, you know, it's 30 years ago, but even so, we're at a place with these nuclear power generating stations where most of them have reached or have passed what was considered to be their lifespan. And, you know, when you are housing nuclear reactions that go on 24/7, at what point do you have to say, okay, the building, the infrastructure can no longer handle this, so we have to close it down? Instead of closing it down, most of these companies are asking for extensions of their license for another 20 years. I mean, my God.
I think this plant did go online in 82 or 83. So, yeah, you're right up against, you know, the lifespan of the plant. And I guess now is when you're going to start finding things breaking down here and there.
Yeah.
Kind of concerns me, you know, because I live that close, but anymore it's just a part of the landscape that everybody's gotten used to and you don't think about it too
yeah.
much. And the less they tell us, you know, stops from creating mass hysteria, and it's a fairly largely populated area with not a lot of areas of egress. So
I just wish that the industry, the nuclear industry, would understand there's a wide space between informed citizenry and mass hysteria. There's a whole big gap in there where people could be given information and told what to do in case something were to go amiss. Hey, listen, Scott, thanks for checking in. I appreciate all that information. Take care, okay? Be careful.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thank you. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. If you've been wondering